Well, thank you all so much for coming. I wasn't expecting this many people. If I'd have known, I would have brought an iron to the tent with me. I will just run through this and I will just get started. So, we're starting off with the claim that James Bond would have been a better spy if he were female. And by the end of this talk, I'm hoping that you're going to sort of believe me on that one. Has that changed? Technical difficulty. Here we go. So I break into buildings. That's what I do. As Lewis said, my name is Katie, and my day job is breaking into buildings. A company will pay for me to come in and test their physical security sensors. Always legally, not just doing this for fun at the weekends. Sorry, I don't know why my dongle's not working. We'll just click. So I work for an offensive cybersecurity company. They're called Ruptura Infosecurity, and they specialize in simulating real-world attacks on companies and organizations. This could be anything from a scattered spider simulation to ransomware simulation or your everyday sort of hacking. I've done dozens of physical security assessments whilst working here. They've ranged from banks, museums, offices and labs, and even some key infrastructure sites like power stations. So a real range of companies that normally hire us. I've done everything from hiding under a desk to avoid somebody, to rearranging offices to get to an insecure port, and enjoying endless free cuppers and biscuits in buildings that I should never have been allowed in. It is one of the perks of the jobs. But I don't just break into buildings. I exploit people's trust, I manipulate their perception of me, and I gain access to private networks and areas without people ever noticing that I was there. Now, you guys are a group of clever people, right? You're all at EMF, after all. So if 99% of people never noticed, do you guys think that you're in the 1% of people that would? Put your hand up if you think you would be hard to social engineer. Anybody think that they would outsmart somebody or not get caught? There's a conscious hand over there. A few. Okay. Some people not sure. I think you're fairly right if you've kept your hands down. I think that's pretty accurate. Because actually, you fail security tests every single day with just normal behavior. The chances are that you're a nice person. You probably hold doors open for people, help people that might look lost, and trust uniforms. And whilst these aren't inherently mistakes, they are just social behaviors. And social engineering never exploits stupidity. It only exploits human expectations. Normal behavior can be weaponized, and predictability becomes a spy's greatest tool. Now, everything I'm about to show you is backed by decades of psychological research. Social engineers like me didn't invent these techniques. We just utilize these behaviors to make it work for us. So whilst we've just covered that social engineering exploits human expectations, we want to understand why that works. We need to understand how your brain actually makes decisions. Most of us like to think that we're rational, logical people, and we imagine that when we're faced with a decision, we carefully weigh up the evidence, consider the risks, and come to a sensible conclusion. But the reality is, your brain is a bit rubbish, and it would never cope if it worked like that. Every single second of every day, your brain is filtering an incredible amount of information. Faces, voices, colors, movements, conversations, notifications, smells, everything. And if you consciously analyzed all of that, you'd be mentally exhausted and your brain would be a puddle. So instead, your brain cheats. It uses shortcuts. It fills in gaps and it predicts what's going to happen next instead of analyzing everything from scratch. Now, most of the time, that's brilliant. That's a really handy thing. It's what allows you to drive a car, walk through a crowded room, recognize a friend instantly. But the problem is these shortcuts are predictable, and anything that's predictable can be exploited. We're going to split this into two ways of thinking. So it's divided into system one and system two thinking, okay? So system one thinking is your brain's autopilot. Super fast, recognizes patterns, makes assumptions, and helps you make thousands of decisions every day without even realizing it. Like, you guys didn't come into this tent and consciously work out if the chair that you're sat on is safe to sit on. It just recognizes a pattern, and you sat down, which is brilliant. So system two thinking is completely different. It's slower, more analytical, and is a lot more energy intensive. This is what you would use if you were solving a maths problem, if you wanted to debug some code, or choose what EMF talk you wanted to come to. And clearly, if you're here, that brain made a good decision. The important part here is that your brain doesn't want to use System 2 thinking. It's too much effort and your brain is a bit lazy. So it uses System 1 thinking whenever it possibly can. So let's bring this into the real world. Imagine you're walking into work. Somebody behind you is dressed in a suit, looking all smart, and carrying two coffees. They catch up to you as you open the front door and say, "Cheers, mate." Did you consciously weigh up the security implications of holding open that door? Probably not. You probably held the door open because your brain recognized a familiar situation. Somebody carrying two coffees in a suit, walking into an office, is normal behavior. So System 1 thinking made the decision before System 2 ever got involved. Now it's time for, I'm sure what you guys are looking forward to, a bit of a story time. So, for this mission, I was tasked with targeting a large insurance company's headquarters. This was an office building that they owned, so they were responsible for providing their own office staff, reception staff, sorry, and all of the access management. Now, there were a few goals that we wanted to achieve here, but the main one was to access the office and to access in the server room. So this should have been locked, as I'm sure you all know. And as always, my own personal goal was to take a branded mug. I have a lovely shelf in my office where I sit all of the branded mugs and think of this as my own sort of professional trophy shelf. And it's always quite good when we have a follow-up call that I have the branded mug to drink from to really embarrass the users. So the first part of any social engineering engagement is doing your research. So everything is pretty much publicly available through company websites, LinkedIn, and so much goes on there that you would never think of. So thank you to all of the marketing teams out there for making my life easy. So after a quick scan of this company's website, I was able to establish which teams worked at which office locations, as well as which teams had recently been hiring. So using this, I could then enter the head office under the false persona of a newer employee from another office. They would have never known, and it made sense for the story. So I chose to imitate a member of the HR team. Pretty good bet, because it's a field that's 77% female. And again, I'm doing my best to stay aligned with the patterns that your brain knows. Now, one thing that can be hard to suss out is outfits. Right? Some companies expect you expect to be super formal or actually really casual. I can't tell you the number of developers that turn up in joggers and vests every day. So it's a very hard thing to make sure that you're dressed appropriately. It's not always online. So for this mission, I went fairly middle ground. I went for a smart casual choice, smart jeans, boots, much like this, and a blouse. Wore nice jewelry, good makeup, and took in a nice handbag. Enough to make sure that I'm limiting any suspicion, regardless of what the office dress code is. If I went in a full suit, I would have stand out. Same way if I went in joggers, I would have stood out for the wrong reason. Now this would be a very different look if I was going in as a Wi-Fi engineer, for example, or a delivery person. So for those sorts of jobs, I go in with like bare nails, limited makeup, minimal jewelry, and a clean but basic wardrobe. Because every single detail has to be considered to avoid sticking out like a sore thumb. Every time your brain is analyzing something, I've already made a mistake, I want to take it further. So I had the look down, the persona done, and I was ready to get into the building. Now the easiest way to avoid any suspicion is to be happy and confident, which is great for a talk like this. It's good practice. And you often find that somebody sticks out more if they try to hide, because it breaks the pattern in your brain. You start to analyze them more. Why are they hiding? Why are they being quiet? What are they doing? They look shifty. But when people think of a criminal, they also don't think of a smiling, happy young woman. They think of a man with a hoodie and a proper hacker, you know, I'm in, and it's quite different. So again, it's keeping you in that System 1 thinking. So after watching where the employees were entering, I walked through the first front door. I asked a chatty lady that was sat at her desk the way to get upstairs. Now this was a deliberate decision. I didn't just choose anybody that was in the office, I chose her specifically. Because this is a nice segue to familiarity biases. So homophily is the theory that people like you if you are like them. It's the ideas of birds of a feather flock together. And I chose her because I knew that she would subconsciously think that we were similar. And not only this, but the similarity bias means that people are more inclined to help someone that is similar to themselves. So I am safe, I'm familiar because I'm like her, but also she then also wants to help me. So it's win-win. It's basically the opposite of stranger danger. So the kind lady tells me the way to get upstairs and I go, making sure, of course, that I say thank you, as us perpetrators still do need manners after all. And as I get up the stairs, there's a small kitchen. Now, getting a cup of tea is probably the best tool that I could ever have in my tool set. It's a surefire way of blending in. Carrying around a cup of tea is always a safe bet. It adds to the idea that you belong there. And nobody thinks that a malicious party is going to come into their kitchen, turn on the coffee machine, decide what they're going to have, wait for it to brew, whilst really they're trying to attack the whole company. So again, it's a familiar image for your brain. So I walked into the main office, cup in hand, a branded one which I, of course, took home after. And I soon found an empty desk and asked the person a few desks down if this desk was free. I think a lot of people often think that if you are breaking into a building or doing a spy job, that you don't ever want to talk to people, but that always sticks out significantly more. You wouldn't have somebody come into an office and say nothing to you. They say, good morning, how was your weekend? Did you watch Love Island? Oh, have we got any good biscuits or anything like that? So you too have to behave like that. So I managed to sit in this chair, and I'm in the clear. Nobody really suspects anything. I've had a bit of a chat. I've got a coffee with me. And from here, I'm able to plug in one of my devices into the Ethernet port that's on the desk. Fortunately, it was not a secured port, so I was able to gain immediate access to the internal network. So that's 2 out of 3 goals completed in about 3 minutes. So I now know that I need to have a walk around. If I have any chance of finding the server room, which is the main target, I need to explore the rest of the office. But people don't make a drink, sit down at the desk, and then get straight back up. That would be abnormal behavior. So I get to enjoy a bit of the lovely office small talk. So for the next 45 minutes, I spent the time working and engaging in the normal office conversations, which actually mostly focused on which biscuit was best, which I actually quite enjoyed. I think I also spent about half an hour just copying and pasting job descriptions from their website into a Word doc in case anybody walked behind and wondered what I was doing. So when it was about 5 minutes to the hour, which again, if you're thinking when a meeting would be, it would be 10 o'clock, for example, you would go and get ready for your meeting at 5 to 10, not at 9:17, for example. So I asked a member of staff that I'd been speaking with if there was a private room that I could use for a meeting, and they, of course, very kindly pointed me in that direction. I was able then to walk around that part of the office without any suspicion at all. Now, the next part was rather lucky. Whilst I did find the server room, it was locked, so well done to that company. However, I also found the extremely cluttered desks of the IT team. It was laden with devices, keyboards here, motherboards there, but most importantly, it had the keys to the server room, lovely and labeled, sat right on the desk. So obviously, here I go, I can pick up the keys, I walked straight into the server room, plugged my device in, hid it under a couple of cardboard boxes, because it's quite messy in there, and I was able to relock the room, returning the keys to the desk without any issues at all. I did, however, have to do this in my socks to avoid my heels from clacking too much as I was walking along. So by now, the mission was complete, right? I documented everything, filmed, taken photos, and it was time to leave. However, if I'd have left then, again, it probably would have set a few alarm bells ringing. Nobody just comes in for an hour if I'm a new employee. So I waited a couple of hours until it was lunchtime. Again, copy and pasting job descriptions for the whole time to avoid any suspicion. And actually, on the way out, I was able to jam one of the electronic door locks, which did give me access to the whole company building as well, out of hours if I wanted. When we went back to check, it was still open. But did, of course, tell the IT manager so they weren't at any risks. So a sprinkling of luck always helps with these sorts of jobs. So whilst the last mission focused on meeting those common stereotypes, this next one meant that I really had to lean even further into the perception of females. This is where the boobs come in. So for this story, I'm going to tell you about the very first social engineering job I did. I think I first did this job when I was about 24, and I had zero experience of a physical security test. I'd done a little bit of vishing, which is voice phishing for those that don't know, being on the phones trying to get people to give me their passwords. But I hadn't done anything else in this realm. At the time, I was one of only 2 women in the company, and it had been decided that the assessment would have been more successful if one of us were to do it. I was intrigued and volunteered, armed with nothing but some year 8 drama skills and a base understanding of psychology. But once I did the first one, I have to say I was truly hooked. the adrenaline rush is crazy, and to be honest, I can really understand why people get into crime. So the target company for this engagement was a very large international law firm. The target, again, is always to get into the building. That's always number one. But I was also tasked with finding and leaving with an unlocked laptop, which to me, for the first one, I thought, bloody hell, I don't have a chance. However, we did give it a go. And this was all whilst trying to remain a paler complexion, as I tend to blush quite a lot. I've never worn thicker foundation to hide all the blush on the day. So to kick this assessment off, we did a little bit of work before. So we'd bought a similar domain, just with a small spelling mistake, and we produced a job interview email invite that was sent to myself. The fake email included a fake phone number of the staff member that we said that I was meeting with. However, if they had called this, it would have gone up to one of my colleagues who would have said, of course, send her in, send her straight through. So we had that bit covered as well. But we did know that this office was actually going to be a really tricky one. It was a big central London office, so think posh lifts, lots of big reception, huge foyer, all of that. And this company only had a few of the floors within this office building. So again, to access those, we knew was going to be a difficult thing to do. So the plan was for me to enter the office and state that I had an interview, where I would then hopefully get a visitor pass and could go upstairs, where from here I could just act as the normal employee. That was the plan. I entered into the building at about 10 o'clock, just after, and I acted very stressed whilst I was looking at my watch repeatedly. I really wanted to create a sense of urgency. I wanted them to think that I was really running late for a very important interview and that they should really pity little old me. Oh, I'm lost, I can't find it. And that worked. So I chose to approach the male staff receptionist. I played into the damsel in distress trope, and I said I was here for an interview, showed them my email, and explained that I'd got lost. Silly old me, and that I couldn't find the office. They were quite friendly, to be honest. They were quite compassionate, and it does always feel a bit harsh that I choose to prey on people's kindness, but it's for the good of the companies, even if I can't sleep at night. So they actually went to pick up the phone to call the actual member of staff that was in the office. However, I did interrupt them and started saying, oh, it's my first interview, I've ruined it already, they're not going to give me the job. They put the phone down, and were like, they're there, and that was fine. They naturally comforted me, they put the phone down, happy days. They printed me out a visitor pass, obviously with a fake name, and they sent me on my way without verifying anything with anybody. Which is not good, good for me. So once I entered into the lift, that persona had to change. I'd gone from visitor and being quite needy, I suppose, a bit helpless, and I needed to change that perspective again. So whilst a visitor pass got me in, it also would have limited my access to the office. Somebody walking around with a visitor pass, can't go everywhere. People are looking at them, checking them out, shifty, what are they here for? And people are just a bit nosy. And I needed to behave like I absolutely belonged there. And as far as they knew, I did. So I placed the pass in my pocket whilst in the lift, and I exited whilst pretending to be on the phone, chat, 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 and I walked past the company receptionist, who actually didn't even look up at me, and I walked straight through into the staff kitchen. Here, I of course made myself a drink. You can never go wrong with a branded mug and a free coffee. Actually, though, this time it was a cheeky hot chocolate. So I had identified now what room I needed to go into, helped by one of the fire maps, right? So you can see every floor, where everything is, and it's labeled quite nicely. So I knew where I needed to go. So I sat at a little table close to that door, which was a keypad-protected door, and I bided my time. I sat, I waited, I watched, sipped my hot chocolate, and waited for a staff member to leave that room. Now, usually when you hear tailgating, you think it's somebody that's going to be following behind you, but you guys know that. It's, again, something that is a familiar pattern in your brain, so you know to look out for it. However, if you're leaving the room, you're not watching then who follows in behind you. You can't see them, firstly. So as somebody left, I was able just to walk straight through, acting like I was able to get in. Another point on this is that I did pretend to dial in some numbers so that anybody that was in the main room or in that office room saw that I had beep, boop, beep, boop, and had tried to get in. I walked through the open door, straight to the back of the office, and sat at an empty desk and began working. So far, I had managed to avoid any suspicion, and it was time to have some fun. Now, a good test of a company's security posture is to check if staff members lock their cabinets. You know, the little rubbish drawers that never shut properly that go underneath your desk. And you will nearly always find that someone never locks their cabinet. And most of the time, they are either extremely senior or have extremely sensitive documents in there. And to be honest, most of the time, it's a combination of both. Now, I have to say, I truly did luck out when I opened the drawers that were sat next to me. In fact, not a single drawer was locked. Drawer number one, I find company bank cards. Drawer number two, pins for the company bank cards. As well as authenticator devices for them as well. And even better, a book of blank checks. Now, of course, it's time to take it to the next level. So out I get the checkbook, write myself a check for £50, and all I had to do was scan it with my banking app and decide how I would spend my newfound fortune. The check actually did clear a couple of days later. And I did enjoy a nice Wagamama's on it, I think. Now, whilst this was just one desk, the rest of the company was no better. And it does give me a good indication of what the general posture is. If one person has left it unlocked, chances are, so have other people. I, in fact, ended up gaining access to private documents, very high-profile case details, and full client lists. It was actually a big mess. Now, rustling under the desks can raise suspicion level. I always want to keep it fairly low, for obvious reasons, and I needed now to get this back to a safe level again. It was time to call upon my most useful tool, which, of course, was a cup of tea. So this time, I began leaving the room carrying an empty mug. As I left, I asked everybody, oh, would you like a cup or anybody for a coffee? I'm going to go make a round of drinks. Does anybody want one? And again, this is just the basic female helper persona, right? So the technique only worked because I was a woman. If a man had gone and done it, it would have been a bit more concerning because in everyday terms, I was basically doing the common trope of women making a sandwich. So Hochschild, he actually states that women are expected in an office building to manage emotions, provide comfort and support in the workplace. And that also includes things like helping new starters and making the teas and coffees. I'm sure if you actually think back at your own office environment, if you're not working from home, that you will find that the females do take on a lot of those responsibilities. So on the flip side of this, men, you're going to love this, guys, are seen to be technically competent, authoritative, and independent, although it is seen to all be with an undertone of selfishness. So stereotypically, a man would never go into an office room and offer them cups of tea and coffees. That's just not something that would happen, stereotypically, right? However, for a woman, again, that's just making us seem safe and just setting all of those suspicion levels back down. To put it simply, women are seen as helpers, and men are seen as leaders. Which is a bit rubbish, to be honest. So a man, yeah, would stand out if he was offering that for all the wrong reasons, but it did actually clear me of suspicion. Actually, once I'd completed the engagement and we had the debrief meeting, the CTO, who did know that the engagement was taking place, because he'd booked it, claimed that he had some small suspicions about me, but that he was totally thrown off by the offer of coffee. He did also claim that he didn't want to question me because you can't ask a woman anything these days. I actually also did get the offer after to go and do crime with him, so it was a good start. I have to say, though, I really do think that taxpayers' money were wasted in the world of James Bond. He didn't need the fancy cars, fabulous tools, or deadly weapons. He just needed a trusty cup of tea. Now, at this point, I had completed 2 out of the 3 mission targets. I'd successfully gained access to the main office, tailgated my way through to the IT office, and now I had the hardest part left, which was stealing an unlocked laptop. I walked through to a larger office area, which was down some stairs, and the secure door had been propped open to avoid any germs spreading via the keypad. Let that sit for a second. The next door actually was locked. It was required an RFID badge. But all I did was simply follow another lady through and say, "Oh, I love your cardie. Where'd you get it from?" Turns out M&S, and she'd let me go straight through. Again, I'm just trying to model all of those familiar and reliable behavior patterns. As I said, yeah, that's all done. However, one of the things I find hardest is acting like I really belong in a room or an office, when actually I've got no idea where I'm going, I've got no idea what's where, and it's a bit hard. You have to avoid looking around, because looking lost just isn't an option. So I pick a spot, any spot, and I make a beeline for wherever that is. So for this office, I quickly went to a printer area. Here they had shelves of stationery. They had envelopes, papers, stamps, and everything. So here, as well as unattended client mail, actually, which was also not good, I picked up an envelope and stuffed it with some blank paper, stamped it, stuck a company sticker on it, and I was then able to walk around the office, looking like I was looking for somebody, because I, of course, had to deliver this envelope, because I'm just a helpful young lady. I continue to walk around the office, looking, oh, are there any desks? And I do come across one unlocked laptop. However, this laptop had very recently been left, and the person had gone to a printer. They were pretty nearby, and they could have come back very, very quickly. So the risk really wasn't worth the reward here. I continued to walk around, and I soon found another unattended laptop, unlocked and still casting up to the screen. I walked into their cubicle, quickly unplugged it, and I went straight to a private call room, whilst holding the screen, making sure it wasn't going to lock. From here, I did change the lock screen timeout to the max, which was, I think, about 4 hours. And I dumped the envelope and walked straight out of the office as calmly as I could and straight into the lifts. I placed the visitor badge back on in the lift, of course, and left through the reception, dropping the badge back to them. I thanked the receptionist so much for all of their help and said that the interview had gone well, because after all, it had. I walked across to a nearby cafe, unlocked with the unlocked laptop in hand, and I messaged the CTO to come and meet me there to retrieve the laptop. Now, as I was sat in this cafe, I got nosy, so I start scrolling, and I had access to everything on this laptop. I'm talking company VPNs, corporate networks without any further verification, emails, calendar, client docs, everything. And it was at this point that I had the emails up that I read the job title of the person's laptop that I had stolen. And they were one of the most senior members of staff. They were unbelievably pissed at the IT team for letting it happen. So let's bring this back to the start of the talk. I said that James Bond would be a better spy if he were a woman. So when people picture somebody breaking into a secure building, they're imagining, as I said, a bloke in a hoodie, bolt cutters, something aggressive or somebody acting shifty. But that is never, ever how it happens. And they're never imagining a woman carrying a cup of tea. Women are often stereotyped as being a couple of things, but mostly helpful, incompetent, and weak. And that weakness means that we are seen to be non-threatening. It's, again, very, very helpful for this line of work, and it's something that we then abuse. But regardless of any biases that you have, social engineers will always find a way to get through to you. Now, whilst none of this actually tells you that I'm an authorized visitor, it tells your brain that I'm safe, even if I'm not meant to be there. So yes, the boobs do help, not because they're magic, but because they trigger a lifetime of unconscious assumptions about who is and who isn't a threat. The lesson isn't, don't trust women. The lesson is that us attackers will exploit whatever assumptions and biases you already have. You should question everything, question everyone, and never, ever assume that women are too nice, too weak, or too dumb to be a threat. I think we've run out of time actually for the activity, but I'll be in the Q&A. And please do remember, if you ever see me at your office, you didn't see me. Thanks so much.